In 1948, the nation of Israel was established, and with it a homeland for Jews from anywhere in the world, with the promise not only that any Jew would be welcomed, but that immediate citizenship would be granted. That immediately created a question, and that is, who is a Jew? A question that was taken to the Israeli Supreme Court, which ruled that a Jew is someone who has a Jewish mother. Now, that has raised further questions through the years, which have been resolved through the Israeli legal system. But most of all, the ruling recognized the powerful influence of mothers. Whether Jew or Gentile, the reality is that your mother probably has enormous spiritual influence upon your life. Even if your mother has long been dead, she probably continues to have significant influence on you. So as very important as fathers are to individuals and to families, the spiritual example and leadership of mothers is enormous, enormous beyond description. Perhaps that is at least one of the reasons why Jesus chose so many women as the examples of what his followers were to be like and what his followers were to do. One of the very best examples is a woman whose story is told in the biography of Jesus, although her name is never mentioned. All we know about her is that she was a widow. Luke gives a very quick telling of the story. In chapter 21, in the Blue Pew Bible, it is on page 1635. As he looked up, Jesus saw the rich putting their gifts into the temple treasury. He also saw a poor widow put in two very small copper coins. "I tell you the truth," he said, "this poor widow has put in more than all the others. And these people gave out of their wealth, but she, out of her poverty, put in all that she had to live on." It was a day when Jesus was teaching in the temple. And during that teaching, he warned the people about their religious leaders, saying that the religious leaders were arrogant, they were proud, they were manipulative. They would do things like trick widows out of their houses while at the very time they were publicly praying as if they were pious and extremely religious. It may be that Jesus was discouraged either by the behavior of the religious leaders or that he had to teach about this difficult subject. So discouraged that he let his head hang down in that discouragement. And then for a moment, he glanced up. And when he glanced up, he saw some very rich people putting their money into containers in the outer court of the Jerusalem temple. There were there 13 receptacles, every one of them trumpet-shaped with the narrow part at the top and then flaring out at the bottom. People would contribute coins because they didn't have paper currency as we do today, and the most valuable of them would be silver or certainly gold. Those who gave could actually designate their gifts. So if you wanted your money to go to pay for wood to burn the sacrifices, then you would choose container number 2. Or if you wanted your money to go to purchase incense for the worship ceremony, then you would put your money in container number 7. Or if you wanted to contribute to the upkeep of the temple, then you might choose container number 11. That day, some very rich people put in large amounts of money and have been criticized ever since. For it is somehow assumed that they were arrogant and they were proud, and they took great delight as their coins dropped into these trumpet-shaped receptacles, as people were saying, ooh and ah, at the gifts they gave. But the truth is that Jesus never hinted any criticism. Instead, he told the story not of the rich people, but of the widow. It was their story. For Jesus saw a poor widow put in two very small copper coins. They were called leptas. Actually, it's the only place in the entire New Testament where a Jewish coin is mentioned. Always elsewhere, It is Roman coinage because it was the Roman government and the Roman currency that was dominant in that part of the world at that time. A lepta was close to worthless, and that's probably why it wasn't mentioned. A lepta was small, smaller than one of our pennies, shaved copper, very, very thin, and worth, it is estimated, about 1/8 of 1 cent in our money today. Now, if she gave 2, that means her total contribution was 1/4 of a cent. If you would like to match that, and you are currently paid in your job $6 an hour, it will be necessary for you to work 1 1/2 seconds in order to match her gift. If you make $100,000 a year and you work a 40-hour week, then it will be necessary for you to work 1/3 of 1 second in order to match her gift. If you have trouble breaking your job down into 1/3 of a second and you just sort of splurge and work the whole second, that means that you will triple the amount of this widow's gift. All of which is to say that what she gave was virtually nothing. It was practically worthless. It was everything she had. It was her life savings. She was a very generous woman. She gave everything. She thought about what she gave, not about what she kept. It's interesting because in our way of thinking of giving, we almost always think in terms of how much we give. How very different it would be if instead we define generosity not by the amount given, but by the amount that is kept. By this measure, she was very generous and totally sacrificial. I recall the story from an earthquake several years ago where it was anticipated by that date that everyone was dead, but they still had the listening devices and the dogs that were there hoping that they might be able to detect some human life. And to the searchers' amazement, there was life under the rubble of one housing building. And so they dug down, and there they found a woman who was dying and soon did die, and with her, her young child, who was really amazingly healthy, just fine. At first, it didn't make sense because there was really no way that anyone could have survived that long without liquid and without food. And then they figured out what happened. That under the rubble, that mother had cut open the tip of her finger and placed her finger in her child's mouth to suck. And over the days, the child had survived while the mother had literally bled to death. Sacrifice, just like Jesus, who gave his blood for others to live. Just like Christians, who sacrificially are generous. Just like this widow, who gave everything. Generosity, giving up all she had. But this marvelous woman was not just generous, she was also godly, although it doesn't actually say that in Jesus' biography. I think instead it is necessary to read between the lines, understanding that this was a point in history when widowhood was especially harsh. Most people weren't wealthy. Most people did not leave estates. Most people made their living in agriculture, and most people were tenant farmers. So if they couldn't work the land, they were just gone, and there was no land to pass on to survivors. That meant then that if a woman's husband died, she was in dire straits. The chances were that she would inherit nothing. Maybe she could go back to her father's house and live there, but there was virtually no economy that allowed for a woman to have employment. It meant that she would probably have to beg, become a prostitute, or starve to death. About this woman, we know that she had lost her husband. We know that she was absolutely poor. And yet she hadn't given up on God. Isn't that astonishing? She is there at the temple. She is there to worship. She is there to give. So even though She lost that which was most valuable and important, and surely her best dreams of life did not come true. It did not change her relationship with God. She still loved God. She still worshiped God. Hey, I know people who give up on God because their cars won't start. People give up on God because they get sick or because their plans don't come together. There are people who stay angry at God for 10 and 20 and 30 years, a lifetime, and become bitter people simply because everything doesn't turn out as they would choose for it to turn out. But not this woman. Even though she had lost everything that anybody else would have considered to be the most valuable things of life, she still loved and worshiped God with everything she had. She was not only generous, but indeed she was godly. Later in the New Testament, there is a powerful paragraph that is written by St. Paul in Romans 8. It starts with a question. Who shall separate us from the love of Christ? Shall trouble or hardship or persecution or famine or nakedness or danger or sword? As it is written, for your sake we face death all day long. We are considered as sheep to be slaughtered. No, in all these things we are more than conquerors through him who loved us. For I am convinced that neither death nor life, neither angels nor demons, neither the present nor the future, nor any powers, neither height nor depth, nor anything else in all creation will be able to separate us from the love of God that is in Christ Jesus our Lord. That was the perspective of this widow. Nothing going wrong, no disappointment could ever separate her from God. She was godly, but not alone. For I can tell you of a legion of examples of others, Christians, women, who have put God first in their lives no matter what, whose dreams have also not come true, whose disappointments have been many, who hold to their Christian values, who are absolutely loyal to God, sometimes in opposition that comes from within their own marriages and household, in some instances under oppression that is within the culture or within the community or within their places of business. Women who have decided that God is number one, not money or possessions or anything else is more important within their lives. Blessed are those women and men who are both generous and godly. But that wasn't all for the widow whom Jesus saw. She also had faith. She was convinced that God would take care of her. She was convinced that if her money ran out, if there was no one else in her family, if everything else was completely lost, that God would find her a job, that God would find her food, that God would find a place for her to stay, that if she had no resources left, God could be depended upon. This past Friday, I was with Paul and Kay Rader. Paul Rader is the recently retired general of the Salvation Army and has left that assignment in London to return to the United States, which is his native land, the first American-born general of the Salvation Army. They were telling about a letter that they received from a Salvation Army soldier, a woman who in her 20s was married with two young children, who wrote to the general and described how difficult her life was and how good and gracious God was. And then she asked for an assignment in the Salvation Army. And understand, the Salvation Army does marvelous work all around the world. In her letter, she requested that the general assign her to the place where no one else wants to go. She said that she's not afraid of anything because she is absolutely convinced that God will take care of her. Kind of like this widow in Jesus' story. This past week was the richest lottery in American history, more than $300 million. And so the news outlets have been full of stories of people who have won previous lotteries. And I was kind of fascinated by the interviews of people who went from having comparatively little to having millions of dollars that they spent on houses and cars and expensive vacations. And I thought to myself, you know, really what this is all about is self-sufficiency, that you do not need to depend upon an employer or an inheritance or anyone or anything else. You have the resources to take care of yourself. Except the reports were that often these people got so deep in debt that they became bankrupt. And even those who were frugal admitted that they were not happier than they were before, and they did not find the joy in their lives which they had sought. What a contrast to someone who is so completely dependent upon God that she and her family are willing to go absolutely anywhere, even if no one else is willing to go there. And I think to myself, there must be an exceptional thrill, an extraordinary privilege to be so completely dependent upon God. Something that I think I miss out on because of health insurance and marvelous medical care and because of a car and because of savings and a house that I can go home to and little worry about where the meal for today or tomorrow will come from. My only issues are which meals to choose and which options I need to exercise. But how marvelous that here is someone who would totally depend upon God and trust him absolutely. It raises for me and perhaps for you the question of whether or not you and I are absolutely convinced that God will take care of us, that our dependence is not upon everyone and everything else, that if all were lost, we would be still trusting God, that we would be convinced of his provision, that we would be like this widow. She had a very special faith. Somehow she just knew that God would provide for her. One of the marvels of mothers who live by faith is that they teach their families how to live by faith, sometimes more so in difficulty than in prosperity. I think of what I have learned from my mother, from my wife, from our daughter, all people who I have seen exercise faith in ways that have stretched and challenged and blessed and grown my faith. Great are those who are generous and godly and full of faith. But how great are they? Well, Jesus said, I tell you the truth, this poor widow has put in more than all the others. That's a stunning statement. Jesus didn't say that what she put in was more than any of the others. It was more than all of the others combined, which makes you wonder if God can even count. How does he come to a conclusion like this? And you begin to say to yourself, apparently it doesn't take very much to impress God. Or do you come to the conclusion that it takes everything to impress God? There is a large, prestigious private Western university that over the last couple of years has been in a major building project in their School of Business and an athletic complex, and so needed to raise very large amounts of money, and received an initial capital contribution of $25 million. That is a very large gift. But what made the news was not so much the amount of the gift, but the person who gave it, for it was the president of the university, which many other university presidents think is a very bad precedent to be established across American higher education. Not only did this university president give the first gift, this very large $25 million gift, but it also turned out in the news reports that he does not accept a salary, nor has he ever accepted a salary. Now, it's obvious that he made his money elsewhere in business. He's very rich. He is doing this university president thing as sort of a second career in life. But think about his gift and very other large gifts that have since followed. Add them all up and come to the conclusion that all of them put together are not as much as this widow gave. She was a truly great woman. A truly great person. So why pick her story to tell on Mother's Day? Well, actually, there are many reasons. But most of all is that many of you mothers here today belong in her league. You're on God's list with your name along with her name. Not because you're widows, not because you're poor, not because your story is the same as her story. You don't live in ancient Israel. You don't worship at the temple. You probably are not Jewish. Those aren't the reasons that you're in her league and on her list. No, it's because you are generous. It's because you give sacrificially to God and to your family and to others. But you're not just generous, you're godly. God is first in your life. And those in your family and outside your family know that God is more important to you than money or possessions or anything else. And you're not just generous and godly, but you are also full of faith. And so you demonstrate to your family and to all of us that you are absolutely convinced that God will take care of you and that you do not need to depend upon anyone or anything else. You are generous and godly and full of faith. And you are great. Not because you're rich or famous, but because of your generosity, godliness, and faith. You are greater than the richest and most famous people in all of the world. So thank you. Thank you on this Mother's Day for who you are and for all that you do. May we all be like you. May we all be like the widow whose story is written into the biography of Jesus, that whether we are men or women, married or single, young or old, rich or poor, mothers or fathers or neither, may we all be generous, godly, full of faith, and great for God. Lord, it is a high example. It is a marvelous model. But the truth of it is that it is the example and model for us all to live, and so we can, and so we shall. Not because we're so wonderful, but because you are so wonderful. Not because we have the strength and the resolve and the resources, but because by your Holy Spirit, all of these things can and shall be, by your grace, the reality in the lives we live for your Son. Praying in his name.